This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 13th, episode 1337, brought to us by the auditors, listeners like you. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Wednesday. Today is Wednesday.
He's a very mixed up horse.
Authorization acknowledged.
You know what they say about Wednesday.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
Have a good Wednesday. Thanks.
I don't know how you cannot feel good after hearing that. You just have to. It's required. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you joining us this morning on this Wednesday morning. And we just lost Jamie.
All I want to know is, did anybody win the lottery? That's all.
No, that's tonight. They're doing the drawing tonight. So we got one more day yet to wait.
So surely one of our listeners has the winning ticket.
That's it. Guaranteed. Surely that's what's going to happen. So I think Jamie's probably, her computer just decided to update right as we started the show. I just saw this on Facebook a couple minutes ago. It's a sign that was in a hotel. And it cracked me up. It said, dogs are welcome in this hotel. We never had a dog that smoked in bed or set fire to the blankets. We never had a dog that stole our towels and played the TV too loud or had a noisy fight with his traveling companion. We never had a dog that got drunk or broke up the furniture. So if your dog can vouch for you, you're welcome too. I love that one.
Maybe they never had a beagle stay there.
Yeah, that's true. We've had some noisy dogs next door for sure at times.
Continuous barking for 14 hours straight.
Right, exactly. So we're glad that you're here. Jennifer is going to tell us a little bit about what's coming up on today's show while I try and...
Who's that? I wonder.
Get Jamie back into the call.
I wonder who's calling.
Hello?
Are you back?
Oh my God, stupid dog.
The dog cut you off?
Yes. I have Lucas in here. He's got a cold, and the dog's in here, and he just threw the ball into the corner. And I don't know if you heard me go, Danny!
Jamie, I can't hear Jamie. I don't know about you, Glenn, but I can't hear Jamie.
I can.
I can't.
Yeah, I know. I'm here. I'm here.
Jennifer,
how are you?
Jennifer, you're going to have to hang up and call back now.
I guess I am.
Oh my gosh, stupid dog. Sorry, what I miss?
You didn't miss much. I just read the dog in the hotel sign that I thought was so funny.
Oh.
But Jennifer was just about to tell us what's on today's show, but now she's gone. So.
Well, my gosh. I got another dog story for you here in the Daily Winnie section.
All right. Let's see if we can get Jennifer back in the meantime. Boy, it's one of those mornings, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like we should start over. Yeah. Sorry, you guys.
Yes. Okay, now I can't get Jennifer back. She needs to reboot. Okay, so we'll let Jennifer reboot. We'll just tell you what's coming up on today's show. So today's show, we have Victoria from Horse and Country TV with the European Report. We're going to talk a little bit about the lottery, why we have to. I think it's required today on every radio station in the world. It's going to be talking about the lottery today. Every morning show. There will not be a morning show that will miss lottery talk, and we don't want to be left out. And then we have Dr. Tanya Cubitt from Performance Horse Nutrition going to be talking about feeding in cold weather. So all of that is coming up on today's show.
And Victoria Spicer.
Yes, with Horse and Country TV. Well, let's do our daily whinnies while we still have sound. Well, my Daily Winnie goes out to some new auditors. I got to tell you, our guests on Monday sure did do the job. We had a couple of auditors on a Monday. Remember, we had a listener highlight, and then we had Dawn Beams on and talking about meeting American Pharoah. And we talked a little bit about being an auditor. We had five auditors sign up that day. Five new people.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah. Terry, Mo, Biz, Lisa, Kathy, and Alex. So actually six new auditors sign up that day. That's the most auditors we've ever had sign up in one day. So we appreciate you guys. And a couple things. I sent you an email with some of the details. But if you're listening this morning and have not requested to be part of the HRN Auditors page, just search for that on Facebook, HRN Auditors, and send in your request to be part of it, and we'll add you to the page. That's where all the fun happens. So you definitely want to make that request as soon as you can. And then if you're getting mugs, if you signed up at certain levels with swag, they'll be getting sent out to you over the next week. So that is what's going on with the new auditors. We really do appreciate it. And I also had an email or two from people saying, how do I become an auditor? It is on the website at horsesinthemorning.com, big banner in the middle of the page, or at Horse Radio Network. Any of the websites, there's a banner there on how to become an auditor for as little as a dollar a month.
Fantastic. Sorry.
I know, Jamie. This is going to be a tough morning for Jamie.
Yeah, I got a sick kid, and like the husband's out of town, and it's just one of those days. But exciting news is Uncle Skip, Chad's uncle, took us to dinner on Saturday.
Uncle Skip?
Uncle Skip.
Doesn't everybody have an Uncle Skip? And you can just picture, is he what I'm picturing?
Yes, yes, he is. And Uncle Skip decides when we sit down to dinner, he lives way on the east side of Phoenix, and he's a snowbird, and he came to join us for dinner, and he said, I'm paying the tab. And I said, well, you don't have to do that. He goes, no, I do, because I'm going to ask you a favor. And I was like, oh, that can't be good. So he says, can you guys dog sit? And we've dog sat for him before, and sure, when do you want us to do it? He had the dog in the car at dinner.
Oh, he brought it along and said, I'll pay, like, but you got to take my dog home?
Yeah. And he like brings out the dog food and the leash, and he's like, see ya. So,
what if you'd said no?
I know. So I'm like, no, we're leaving town. Like, what was he going to do? He had no plans. He was like flying out the next morning to go to like Lord knows where. So yeah, we have now four dogs in the house just to add to the excitement. Good job. You found Woody. Very good.
And a sick child and no husband.
And no husband, a sick kid, four dogs. And yeah. And so Sadie this morning, my name is Sadie. I went to the restroom and I noticed an odd smell. I don't know what that smell is. Wait, I know what that smell is. I'm like, it smells like dog poop. I can't find it though. I'm looking everywhere. Sadie, in the middle of the night, had jumped into the bathtub and crapped in the bathtub.
Ugh. Nothing worse than that either.
Please, no, don't go back there. You come back over here.
Worse than that either.
No, but at least it wasn't on the white carpet, I guess. But yeah, seriously, like it pooped in my bathtub. Like it jumped in the tub.
We're going to be getting the landlord's pug today.
And that's exciting.
Lisa's a really good dog, you know, really good pug. But pugs are so noisy. They're just the noisiest dog, not but barking, just breathing. Just existing, they're noisy. I never can get over there that she's sitting there sleeping and it sounds like a train, you know?
My brother had a pug for like 14 years, and yeah, it's exactly like that.
Oh, they and just... Jennifer just texted me and said her computer decided to do updates. So
good.
She'll be back whenever that's done. It's that Wednesday. It's Bad Tech Wednesday. We're just going to name it Bad Tech Wednesday. And then you had a smoke alarm going off with that beep, beep.
It's still doing beep. It, and I just don't know which one it is.
And there's nothing more annoying, and that always starts at 3 in the morning. That never starts during the day.
No, there's never a simple 3 p.m. reminder. No. It's always 3 a.m. You're like, beep. Yeah.
That's right.
So that might happen because it's letting me know the battery is low.
Yes, exactly. And then you can never figure out which one it is. And then you got to crawl up in the thing. And then you got to try and get it off the wall. And then who has a 9-volt battery in the house anymore? Nobody. Exactly.
And then it's 3 a.m. It's beeping in your face. You can't get it down off the wall. You finally get it off the wall, and then you're trying to open the battery compartment. There is a reason why people in TV shows and movies beat it with a hammer.
That's
that is what you want to do.
That's exactly right. Well, today, of course, is lottery day, 11 o'clock tonight Eastern time. We're going to find out if somebody wins the now $1.5 billion jackpot. Now, I do have some numbers for you here. That if you took the lump sum, that means that it is $868 million for a lump sum. And after taxes, you will be left with $524 million. Think about that. Of your $1.5 billion winnings, you're going to get a third of it.
Ugh, it's ridiculous.
I know. And who can live on $524 million? That's just, I think that's too much to ask of any one person. I really do.
I don't know how people slum it like that.
So your taxes are $300 million. Now, it never made sense to me. The Canadians do not tax lottery. It never made sense to me that the government who runs the lottery then turns around and taxes the winner.
Well, isn't it supposed to be going to education?
Yeah, but it's the government, the states that run the lottery.
Yeah.
And then they give it out to whoever. Now, the taxes that they charge you on your lottery winnings go to the general fund, not to the education or whatever.
Oh, that's nice.
The profit that they make on selling the tickets is what goes to, like, education or whatever it is in your state. But, yeah, so, no, that goes to the general fund. Matter of fact, one of the states, I forget whether it was Kansas or Nebraska or one of them in the middle of the country, was hoping that they would have the winner because they're $10 million in the hole already this year, and that would make up their deficit.
Well, I hate to let them know that it's not going to happen because the ticket was sold here in Arizona.
Did you buy yours? I got mine yesterday.
Yeah, and I only buy one because, I mean, really, it's not really upping your chances a ton to spend $100 on it. But, I told the girl, she's like, I'm selling. I said to her, I was like, so she didn't even give me the option for a quick pick or anything or what for the lump sum. I guess everybody just
No, you choose that after you win.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Yeah, you get to pick that after you win.
Well, good. But I said to her, I said, have you played? She goes, I don't need to. Everybody that comes in usually buys me a ticket, too.
Really?
She said that people just like buy one for them, they buy one for her.
Was she cute and adorable?
Yes.
How can I guess, right?
I know. They probably put their phone number on the back, too.
Well, now, it also depends on what state you live in, whether you have to pay state taxes. Like, we live in Florida, so there's no state taxes, so we wouldn't have to. But if you're in New York, you would end up paying $44 million more in taxes to New York. So we would be lucky to live in Florida at that point. And, oh, by the way, apparently you cannot change your state of residence immediately when you win. That's not allowed.
I was going to say, I live with you guys.
Apparently that's not allowed. They catch you on that. And even if you, this is interesting too, if you took the payments over 30 years, it starts out, by the way, at like $25 million the first year, and then it goes up. And actually by the last years of payments, it's like $40, $50 million.
Because they've invested your money.
Yeah,
for so
it's
long.
Graded or something. So, okay, let me add Jennifer and see if I can get her back on here someday. So if that happens, then and you live in Arizona at the time, but then you move after you started getting your lottery, your yearly checks. It's still Arizona that gets the money, no matter what state you move into, because you won it there. So,
well, there was a place that won that sold the winning ticket in Georgia, one of these big Mega Millions or Powerball or whatever. And they sold the ticket, and the actual gas station that sold it, too, was on the way to the barn, so I went by there all the time. They got, like, $50,000 just for selling the winning ticket.
If the gas station or whoever sells this winning ticket because of the amount will actually receive $1 million.
Oh, my gosh. See?
Yes.
I'm doing you guys a favor.
So Jennifer, if you can hear us, try calling me because I apparently can't add you back in.
So, I'm here.
Oh, there she is. Yay. I couldn't
call out. Skype doesn't want me to call anybody anymore.
Okay.
Done.
I don't know what happened there. But so Jennifer did a poll. One of our most successful posts in a month or two. And she put a poll out on Monday on our Horses in the Morning page. We call it the hashtag hit'em poll. And she said, if you won the $1 billion lottery, which would you buy first? A, horses. B, a farm to keep more horses. Or C, a super cool truck and trailer to transport your horses. And we had 77 comments. So people were really into this one and had given some thought to what they were going to do with their riches. And overwhelmingly, people said they'd buy the farm first.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to buy 20 horses and have no place to put them because it takes, a month or two to close the deal on the farm.
And it's hard to find a good boarding facility, too, especially when you just imported Totalus.
Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> It's got to be a really nice place.
Speaking of which, let's get back to that in a minute. Remind me. But there were a couple of good comments. Lorraine Jackson said, beautiful brand new cherry red Ford F-150 and a modest little weekender with a matching red racing stripe. Something lightweight and easy to haul. I'd use it 5 days a week. What are you doing with a Ford F-150? You should be with a Ford F-450. Who cares about gas or anything else at that point?
Or if you really want to do well, get a Dodge.
Dodge, right.
Ooh, throw down.
Ellen said, buying a new farm could take a while. I'd buy the dream horse first and then board it so I could put my name on the deed. And in the meantime, I'd buy a truck and trailer to get from the boarding facility to my new home. I told Jennifer the first thing we're going to do is go buy cars because that's like easy. You just show up and you can go home with it. You drive off with it, right? So you go, you buy your
gratification.
Yeah, it's instant gratification. You just write them a check and you drive it off the lot. Whereas buying a farm takes months. There's hassles, there's inspections, all that stuff. You need something that's going to satisfy your urge immediately to spend $100,000 on a new truck. By the way, a Dodge Dually. Diesel.
How much is it going to cost me to hire my personal driver?
Well, that you could do, but then you got to interview and all that
You're right. It's ridiculous. I'll take my time with that. So, I guarantee that I would start breaking ground on that Oklahoma land, and that would be my tiny home.
Yeah, that would be your part-time house you visit once a year
your
for a couple
home?
Weeks.
That's my tiny home.
Yeah,
near the in-laws,
that gives you a place to stay when you go and visit the family.
Exactly. I mean, really.
Intern Haley said, "The dream farm plus daily massages for my horse and me."
Ooh, that
sounds pretty good, actually. Denise Raymond said, I have my eye on a 26-acre island in the Keys, and I'll have a farm there to keep more horses. So, but you have nobody to ride with, right?
Only by invitation.
Yeah, and they can't
Denise
really.
Is like that.
Yeah, that's true. But nobody's going to be able to bring their horse unless they have, a boat with a stall in it. You're going to be kind of stuck for having friends bring their horses over to ride.
I could, with all that money, be the first person to invent a helicopter with a shipping stall in it.
Yes,
come on over. I'll come pick you up. We'll go for a ride.
I saw also yesterday everybody was posting this, and we actually did a little bit more research on it. The Pride and Prejudice estate that's up for sale in England.
Pemberley.
The Wentworth Woodhouse, and it's, they say, one of the finest examples of 18th century British architecture, and one of the biggest. It had 124,000 square feet. It made it into the 1966 Guinness World Records as the largest private home in Britain. It is bigger in facade by nearly twice of Buckingham Palace, and it has 300 rooms and 5 miles of corridors. Think about that.
That's a lot of that heating bill. I always say the AC bill or the heating bill. Sorry, the door keeps opening and closing. That's
the child. Yes.
Uh-huh. And Chad says that people that own that don't worry about their heating bill.
Yeah, but that's not true because Jennifer, is it the last two owners that have gone bankrupt?
Pretty much, yep.
Yep. The problem with this place, they have a little issue with the structure right now. Now, think about this, people. It's 300 rooms, 124,000 square feet. Is they mined under it, which is where the people got all the money.
No. Quite the reverse.
Okay.
The government of Britain took the mining rights for the property and said, we're going to mine under your house whether you like it or not, and dug all the coal out from underneath of the home and a lot of the land. So the people who owned the property at the time were busily going bankrupt because they changed the rules about who gets to keep what money in Britain during the war years, World War One and World War Two. So the people who owned the property didn't get any of the money from the coal.
And now, because
their house just sank.
But now, because the mining happened underneath it, parts of the house are sinking. So, you know, you got a bit of a maintenance problem. And that's the reason this is only $12.5 million, by the way, which doesn't that seem kind of cheap. It's because it's a maintenance nightmare.
I don't know. I've looked into it.
What? I hate them.
Don't do that. Don't hit the dog. He's so honest.
Although
Mom,
there's so many rooms, you could just send him off and not see him for a month.
I will see you next Tuesday, my friend.
Just, Lucas, go play.
Try to find me.
Go play. See that expensive furniture over there? Just go play.
Awesome.
See that vase? You can just break that up. Do whatever you want. There's a pool in the back somewhere.
I'm sure there is.
I got a funny story. Apparently, whoever was living there in 1931, their son turned, the young master of the house had his 21st birthday. The guest list for the 6 balls and receptions for his 21st birthday was 15,000 people. Guests were given confetti of different colors to lay in a trail from their bedroom to the dining room so they could find their way back.
Oh, my God. I just want to visit this house.
Because, you know, if you think about 5 miles of corridors, unless you have a GPS, how do you know where you would know how to get back to your room? And, of course, it required an army of staff to keep it going. In its Edwardian prime, there were 85 indoor staff and 300 outdoor staff, including one guy to take care of the bears.
What?
There's a bear keeper. They had one guy in the house that was the rat catcher. That was the sole job, was to catch the rats.
Just get some cats.
Yeah.
How many cats would you need to cover 300 rooms, though?
Here, kitty, kitty,
talk
kitty,
about
kitty,
kitty litter boxes. Oh, my God. And then they'd all be like the beast. Ugh. So, yeah, there's a little bit about the house that you can buy for $12 million. That's going to cost you about the $500 million to keep it going the first year alone.
Well, maybe it's not the soundest investment. We'll reconsider.
It hasn't been for everybody who went bankrupt buying it. No, it has not been the soundest investment. So anyway, I had to tell you about that. I just thought that was funny.
Now let's talk a little totalist, because
yes.
Everybody seems to think that I need to breed this marriage totalist, and I have not won the lottery yet. If I do, I'll just buy totalist. But like right now we're looking at, I think,
I think the point was that his price came down to what, 2,500 euro?
Yeah, 2,500 euro from 4,000. That is a straw. So that's one dose and no live full guarantee.
Totalist is confident, isn't he?
he's totalist. So yeah, I will. I'll consider it. I'll keep it on my list. However, I think that the main factor of why I'm not going to be able to breed a totalist is my vet does fresh cooled semen, not frozen. So,
yeah.
Ugh, too bad.
Yeah, it's hard to get it fresh from Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to have Chad fly his fighter over, pick it up, and fly it immediately back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the Air Force doesn't really like that, so.
Yeah. What are you carrying?
It'd be the last flight he ever made.
What is that in there? That's, oh, semen.
Semen, yes.
Okay, yeah. Sure. You're fired. And you're going to jail.
Doesn't take up much room on the plane.
I know. It'd be easy to fly.
Yeah. A little ice chest, you'd be good.
Now, I think we were talking about Jennifer booking the stallion owner or the stallion farm owner about the one that I did choose. Did we make any progress with that?
The progress at this point is zero.
Okay. Good to know. Good work, producer.
So we're still leaning toward the one we talked about before?
Rubignon. And I pick up my baby mama on Saturday.
So this Saturday? Oh, good.
This Saturday, I'll have a mare.
Great. Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, one more story here before we get to Victoria this morning is it looks like, you know, we had John Katz, who's a very, very, very famous author, best-selling author many, many times over on the show before. He's one that's kind of giving us reports on the New York carriage horse situation with the commercial carriage drivers. And, you know, just to review very quickly for those of you that have been living under a rock the last 3 years, since the new mayor came in, one of his goals was to get the carriages out. And part of the reason for that was that he had received very large donations from the animal rights activists and also from builders who want to build where the stables are, that block where the stables are in New York City. And it takes up a good, you know, a good footprint of space, the stables, because there's 250 horses there. That block where it is one of the most desirable blocks now and being built up and refurbished. So the real estate developers have really wanted that piece. Well, he didn't get very far with kicking the horses out because they couldn't get the votes in the city council to do it. And there was a lot of all the unions were against it because of the drivers are part of the Teamster union. They are very powerful in New York. So they really didn't get very much love in getting rid of the horses that way. Well, now apparently the city council has gotten in on the act and they have been negotiating with the Teamsters union. And how this is happening, I don't know, because it really does change. Still, it's just about getting them out. I've been trying to follow up with our contacts in New York and haven't gotten a response yet. But the Daily News says the negotiations are that it would move the horses from where they are in their stables in the city out to Central Park, and that the city would build a barn for them to house 77 horses, which means they would drop the number of horses from over 200 to 77. 150 horses would be gone, along with a bunch of drivers would lose their jobs. So we're not quite sure how this is all coming about or why. So what would be left is the city is saying that they could have 77 horses and they would drive in the park and, you know, no more horses on city streets, and that would be the compromise. So we're not sure what would happen with the other horses at this point. Nothing's been said other than it's being written into the bill that they cannot go for slaughter, which I do not believe they would anyway. There'll be people begging for these horses. They're well-trained, bomb-proof horses. So
it just goes to show you, it was never about the horses.
No.
It was always, don't you climb up
it was
on
that always thing. About that
it's
property.
Always about the property.
Yep, always here. About that property, because they're going to tear that stables down and they're going to put a high-rise up. That's exactly what's going to happen. It's always been about that property. And, you know, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's why they're losing here. And it was inevitable. I think what's happened is it was inevitable that they realized that they were going to be gone. At least this way they're salvaging some jobs, and their horses still get to be in the city. You know, there still gets to be a horse presence in the city, even though it's much reduced.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get somebody on from one of our drivers from up there that we've had on many times before, and we'll find out hopefully more details if they can even talk about it.
Yeah.
But that's the latest.
All right. Well, real quick before I go turn on SpongeBob, you want to go watch SpongeBob? Uh-huh. There is the open house division, speaking of breeding, by the way, the open house for all of the Kentucky farms are starting to come in. So if you live in the Kentucky area and you want to go visit some of these farms, starting with Gainesway, that's going to be, I'll post the link, but they've already posted openings, and this is all happening like early, you know, January 9th, 10th, for several days. Windstar Farms, Spendthrift Farms, Jonabell, Lane's End, and Gainesway have already been posted. So we'll definitely, I'll post the link to that, because they're all states all over the place, all over the country are doing these open houses. So Florida has some that are going to open.
Oh, cool.
Pleasant Acres, Northwest Stud, Stroud's.
Yeah, Lane. Definitely post a link, because some of those will be in our area here in Ocala. So
Double Diamond in Ocala.
Yeah, it's right down the street from us.
Is it really?
Yep,
okay,
yep.
Well, you can go there January 23rd, 10 to 1.
Oh, wow, cool. Yeah.
Adina Springs in Williston. So I'll definitely post that.
Yeah, post that. Well, that would be something fun to do, Jennifer. All right, let's do this. Let's let Jamie go take care of things with the child.
Be right back.
Okay, we'll talk to, we'll find out about Dr. Roses, our sponsor for the day. I'll get Victoria on, and we'll talk a little European action. What's going on over there at Horse and Country TV. Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective for treatment for all manner of cuts and scrapes on your horse. And Dr. Rose's is the must-have product here at the Horse Radio Network headquarters to keep PT Scooter's delicate white pasterns free from dew poisoning and scratches. Ask for Dr. Rose's at your local tack store or feed supplier, or visit them online at drrosesremedies.com. That's drrosesremedies.com. I do want to get a little, give a little love to Dr. Rose's Remedies as well. They've been sponsoring our shows almost since the very beginning. That is a product that we keep around here. Don't tell anybody, but we use it too. But if you have scratches or any kind of abrasions or small cuts on your horse, or we've even used it on the dog, whatever you've got, Dr. Rose's really does work. It's a product that you need to keep around. Make sure you have handy. We have it in the barn. We have it in the house. We have it in the trailer. Everywhere we go, we keep Dr. Rose's handy. It's one of those products that you really do want to have around. It really does work with scratches. Poor Scooter with his little white feet, his four little white feet here in Florida with the dew and everything. He gets scratches, and we use it, and in a couple days, they're gone. So Dr. Rose's is something that you want to make sure you have one of next time you go out to the store and you see it. Check it out. And I don't know if we have Victoria here with us or not. I can't tell.
Well, we're just having a great, wacky, crappy tech day, aren't we?
Yes, we are, apparently, because I cannot get a hold of Victoria here either. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to play the song right now, and I'm going to hang up on everybody. I'm going to start fresh while the song is playing. The listeners will hear the song. They won't know what's going on in the background. But you're really getting behind the scenes today. So let's...
Do you have a song loaded, Glenn? Did you remember that?
Yes, I do. And this is a brand new song from our friend over in Switzerland, Fleur Magali. She did a brand new song called The 90 Days of Summer, because over there it's winter too. And she just thought she'd write this song about summer in the middle of winter to make everybody feel warmer and happy. And I know a lot of you had a snowstorm yesterday. So this is for all of you, The 90 Days of Summer.
think I'm gonna need a bit of drama in this 90 days of summer. Only wish it would last longer. Why don't you give? Hey, I'm gonna need 90 days of summer. Only wish it would last longer. We just can't get enough summer. We just can't get enough summer. 90 days of summer. Only wish it would last longer. We just can't get enough summer. We just can't get enough summer. 90 days of summer. Only wish it would last longer. Yeah, I can't get enough. Can't get enough.
Sneak right up on you. You don't know what to do, and you may not know which way to turn. Run, you can run to me. I'm always within reach, and I'll give you love like you.
Well, sorry about that. We had to throw in an extra song because my computer decided to do updates after we lost everybody. So it's just me here right now. I still at this point can't seem to get into Skype to get everybody back on, but hopefully that'll happen in just another second. I wanted to thank everybody. We've received a lot of emails about various things over the last couple of weeks, and it's been kind of nice hearing from everybody around the world. We still have our big announcement coming up on Stable Scoop here on Friday, and hopefully on Friday we will have... Jennifer just came in the office here. She's going to try and help me out, I think. I don't know. Let's see if that mic works.
Am I here?
I think so, yes.
Yay! I've joined the fun!
She's over here in my office because I cannot apparently get back on Skype at this point.
Hey, I tell you what.
Yes.
Why don't we do this?
Okay.
We have a pre-recorded horse health segment this week with Dr. Tanya Cubitt. Why don't we have a visit with her while you try to get your computer work again?
All right, sounds good. And of course, it is that technology day. When it happens, it happens
all right, in spades.
And
yeah.
Apparently, my computer is now saying, unfortunately, Skype is not available right now.
Well, so we just can't use it. Yeah.
We can't use it. So sorry, Victoria, we can't get her on the phone. We can't get Jamie back at this point. So,
but we can learn all about how to feed your horse properly in wintertime.
In wintertime, which
yes.
is very important.
It's very interesting.
It's very wintry in a lot of places
right now.
Oh,
is it?
All right, let's take a listen.
And I'm so happy to welcome back to the show Dr. Tanya Cubitt from Performance Horse Nutrition, who is here to help us with all of the little question marks that float around above our head when it comes to keeping our horses' diets in balance. And cold weather is on the way. So how are you going to help us out with cold weather nutrition needs for our horses this week?
Oh, well, thanks for having me back, Jennifer. Now, last month we talked about how much hay you would need to stockpile or keep for one horse over the winter time. That was given that it was normal temperatures and it wasn't windy and raining and snowing. When we add some of these other environmental conditions to the mix, it really changes the caloric requirements of the horse. So he needs more calories to just maintain body weight. And ideally, I always like to try and supply those extra calories in the form of fiber or forage first before we go to adding a lot of extra concentrate grain. Sometimes, though, there's just no way they can eat enough hay if the conditions are poor enough. So we do need to, and obviously for vitamins and minerals as well, but add additional grain to get those calories so they can keep warm. So if we think about in cold and windy weather, these environmental conditions affect horses because they'll decrease their feed intake because they're trying to seek more shelter if it's really poor weather. If the snow has accumulated greater than 3 inches, it really covers the grass. And I know the grass is not growing at that point, but sometimes it's just some fiber, some roughage to chew on. So that really can decrease their roughage intake. If they're having to pour through deep snow, that also increases their workload. And in these cold, windy conditions, they lose a lot more body heat and burn more energy to stay warm. So we've got this number. It's called the lower critical temperature, or LCT, value. And this is the temperature below which metabolic heat production must be increased to maintain body temperature. And that's a big, long way of saying below this temperature, the horse is really going to burn a lot of more calories just to maintain their body condition. So if we think about mature horses, the range for this LCT, or lower critical temperature, is between 5 degrees Fahrenheit and 41 degrees Fahrenheit. And I know that's a pretty wide spread, but it also depends on if you have a thin-coated type of horse or a thick-coated horse. Usually we go that thin-coated horse, his lower critical temperature is around 41 degrees Fahrenheit, so below that we really have to start feeding extra calories just to maintain body condition. But if it's a pretty easy-keeping, thick-coated, say, pony, he might be able to tolerate down near that 5 degrees temperature. It's also where the horse's used to living. If we take a horse that's used to living in Florida and then we ship him to New England at 41 degrees, I'm sure he's going to start to get a little colder. And then young horses, yeah, exactly. Young horses, obviously, they're a little different. They're around, they have a 12 degrees Fahrenheit to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's slightly less there. So for each decrease in coldness of 1 degree below that critical temperature, we have to increase the energy requirements for the horse. So if we look at just regular old maintenance, an average 1,000-pound horse requires 15 megacals per day of energy just to maintain. And usually we can supply that amount of energy from a decent quality hay. But let's say we go 10 degrees below that. Say our horse is a thin coat and we estimate his kind of minimum threshold is about 41 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, last night it was 31 degrees Fahrenheit. So his energy requirements have gone up. So we have to add another 2 pounds of hay. So last month I said a bare minimum for a horse would be 1.5% of his body weight. So 15 pounds of hay for that 1,000-pound horse. If we go down 10 degrees below his lower threshold, we've got to add an extra 2 pounds. So now we're at 17 pounds of hay. If we go 20 degrees below that threshold, now we've got to add an extra 4 pounds. So now we're looking at 19 pounds of hay. So you kind of understand as the lower the temperature gets, the more you have to increase your hay because of the increased energy requirements over that minimum 15 pounds.
Now,
go ahead.
Question. You mentioned young horses, that threshold of low temperature where they have to really start using up calories to stay warm is a little bit narrower than an adult horse.
Yes.
In a senior horse, does it once again begin to narrow when you have horses that are in their 20s?
Yes. And the reason why we don't have an actual kind of category for the older horse is because older horses all seem to be a little bit different. You know, I work with some 30-year-old ponies that still have a mouthful of teeth and a thick coat, and they're good as gold at 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So, yes, a
24-year-old thoroughbred might be very different.
It might be very different, and especially if he's never really developed a thick coat. He's a harder keeper anyway. Any horses that are harder to keep usually lose weight throughout the wintertime. We always go with that upper end of the threshold, say they're around 41 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit. If it gets much below that, just know that, he was maintaining his body weight well on the 15 to 20 pounds of hay. Now I've got to start increasing that. And you really have to increase it even more when it starts to get windy and raining. So you'll notice if you have a run-in shed in your field or your horses can have access to the stall without you putting them in, they can just come and go. The weather has got to be pretty inclement, pretty windy, pretty cold, pretty rainy before they will choose to go into the stall or into the run-in shed. But say we have an average temperature of 32 degrees freezing. If we add on top of that a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind, we've just immediately increased the calories required per day by, say, 4 to 8 megacals a day. So that works out to be about 4 to 8 pounds of hay a day. Now I'm assuming with all these calculations that we've got a fairly high in nutritional value hay. We don't just have a stalky, stemmy round bale that's in the field that is really just something for them to chew on. This is a decent quality hay that we're feeding the horses. If it's if we're adding rain to the equation, so it's freezing and we've got some freezing rain, then we're going to have to add an additional 6 pounds of hay a day. And then if it's raining and it's really windy, you know, the wind chill values make the temperatures seem a lot colder. And we could be up to adding on top of our 15 pounds a day, which was maintenance, and if 42 was my horse's minimum threshold, and the temperature is now 32. Now we're adding 2 pounds of hay for the temperature increase and another 10 to 14 pounds of hay because it's raining and windy. So we're up to adding, you know, 16 pounds of hay on top of my already 15. We're up to 30 pounds of hay a day. Some horses just aren't going to be able to consume that much hay, or you're just not going to be able to provide them that much hay based on, you know, the availability in your area. And that's where, number one, I always, okay, well, let's add some higher calorie hay. So maybe add a little alfalfa. And if that's not adding me enough calories, then you're going to have to bump up the grain concentrate. So that we can boost the amount of calories that the horse is getting so that they can just maintain body weight. Because we really don't want these horses to come out of the end of winter with a significant weight loss. Now, it's okay. It's very normal for horses to lose a little bit of weight throughout the winter. That's a if you look at horses in the wild, that it would be very normal. And I think that's actually a reason why there are no laminitic horses in the wild, because they lost a little weight in the wintertime, which prepared them for this kind of onset of spring grass. But just be aware, when it gets cold, we have to bump up the hay. When it gets windy, bump it up a little bit more. When it's windy and raining, bump it up a little more than what would just normally maintain them on a sunny day.
So it's normal and typical for a horse to lose a little bit of weight over the winter months, especially when you're an idle horse, or mostly idle horse, versus a competition horse whose diet and nutrition and exercise needs don't allow that to change a lot, for very good reason. What would be a, oh, okay, he's lost a little bit of weight over the winter, versus, ooh, he lost way too much weight over the winter. Where could your average horse person look? How would you tell the difference? What would be okay and what would be, I'm sorry, honey, you didn't feed him enough over the winter?
Again, this is going to all come down to what is he going into the winter? Because I could say, oh, well, he lost 25 pounds and that would be fine. If the horse went into the winter 50 pounds overweight and he came out 25 pounds lighter, that actually would be fantastic.
Could you use the... Because a couple of
I would use the body condition scoring system.
Exactly. Well, I thought, can you use that condition scoring system if he goes into the winter at a 6
and he came out at a 5, 5.5, that would be absolutely fine.
But if he went in at a 6 and came out at a 3, not so good.
Not so good. Okay. No, if he's dropping multiple condition scores, that's not great. Unless he went in at an 8 and he came out at a 5, then I would be okay with that too. So it all depends on what he goes in as.
Got it.
The winter, I know this sounds a little harsh, but the winter is a really ideal season to help horse owners maintain their horse's body weight. If you have an overweight horse that you, for the life of you, just cannot get weight off and you don't have any extra time in your day to exercise some more, then don't put an extra cover on him. Keep him out a few nights. The more he has to, you know, use up extra calories keeping warm, that's more calories that will be used keeping warm and not that are going to be laid down as body fat. So I know it sounds a little harsh, but...
Yeah.
If you've tried everything throughout the year and you just struggle to keep a good body weight because the horses are always overweight, then utilize the winter. And I will say that there is not a blanket on the market for a normal horse that isn't an old senior horse, for example, that has a better insulation than the horse's natural coat. So if you don't clip your horse's coat in the wintertime and you really don't ride him that much, so you're not worried about a lot of sweat and drying and that kind of thing, when they puff up their hair coat, that they create this air pocket between the end of the hair and their body that is an excellent insulator to that cold, cold weather. When we put a coat cover on it, we flatten that down and we take away their own natural ability to stay warm and
I think that's,
just rely on the coat. So.
kind of a side note that's it's not nutrition related, but certainly management related. I see that mistake a lot in that people buy a blanket for their horse in the winter, and it's waterproof, good for them, because unless it's waterproof, don't put it on them outside. But they forget about the fact that in the winter, when they put that blanket on the horse, they negate the horse's natural insulating system, his hair coat, by making it completely flat.
Yes, but absolutely.
They don't make up for it by using a blanket with some insulating value. They'll put a turnout sheet with no insulation on a horse when mm-hmm. it's 40 degrees and cold and windy for 4 days straight. So what they've basically done is that's just like you standing in a cold rainstorm with nothing but a t-shirt and a raincoat on. It's not
yes,
keeping the horse
warm. And
you'd be
freezing. Exactly.
And then you wonder why the horse lost weight over the winter. It's because they eliminated the horse's ability to keep himself warm. He kept him dry, but he certainly wasn't
yeah.
warm. So you have to take both of those things into consideration. Just because he has a winter coat doesn't mean a waterproof sheet is always the best bet. Sometimes naked is a better bet, and sometimes something with some insulating value is a better bet. So you need to
absolutely.
Take all those things into consideration.
And before you consider throwing another cover on, look at how much forage your horse is getting. And if there's room to give him a little more forage, as I said in our last episode, that is going to be like you drinking a cup of coffee or a hot cup of soup. It's going to keep him warm from the inside out. And really, the lower nutritional value hay, the more those bacteria in the hindgut have to work to digest the hay, the more heat they create. So having a little stemmy hay mixed in the wintertime is really ideal.
Perfect. Wow, this is all sorts of interesting things that I frankly hadn't necessarily thought of about feeding my horse forage in the cold weather. So if folks have more questions about feeding in cold weather or warm weather for that matter, where can they find you?
They can find me at performancehorsenutrition.com. We've got our phone number, our email address. Pop us a line and we'll answer any questions you have.
There you go. And thank you so much to Jennifer for doing those interviews and getting those accomplished. Sometimes with the time differences with everything that we're doing, people can't just be here in the morning live.
Well, yeah, so. It kind of works out that way. And when I do it not on the live show, I get to ask lots and lots and lots and lots of questions
because yes.
you can't tell me I'm out of time.
That's true. That's true. Well, unfortunately, what it looks like is that it wasn't our problem at all. It was
Skype. I like that idea.
Skype crashed.
Yay,
for everybody.
Skype.
There were a lot of people on Twitter complaining about Skype crashing. So Skype had an outage, and which means we lost everybody. That's why. And it was right at the time we were trying to get Victoria on.
Oh,
she comes
wow.
on. You know, we can't do this show without Skype, basically. So we couldn't get Victoria. Jamie disappeared, and we don't know, you know, where she is. Or
I think
what.
Jamie won the lottery, and she just walked
that's
out.
That's it. Oh, maybe that's it.
That's what I think.
Or she's just planning to. One or the other. actually, and she had a sick child this morning. It was just one of those mornings.
Yeah.
So we are going to wrap the show early. We're just going to call it a day early and cut our losses and start again tomorrow.
We are going to salve our wounded egos with a little
Dr. Roses. That's right.
And then call it an afternoon.
And we won't have scar tissue.
And we will not have scar tissue or icky buildup. Yeah,
that's
like
correct.
That.
Yep, yeah. We won't have any.
No
of
proud
that.
Flesh here.
Well, good luck tonight, everybody. We hope that one of you is 500 million.
Yeah.
I won't say a billion and a half because you're not going to get that.
No.
Is 500 million richer when the day is done.
Yeah.
I think you could probably live on that. Do not buy the Pride and Prejudice house or you'll be broke in a year.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe a nice little, instead of 300 rooms, maybe a nice little 5-room, 10-room
They
house.
Can buy the Playboy Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sale, too.
200 million, and they're saying it's a teardown. It's
yeah.
so
it comes
wreck.
With a Playboy.
Yeah, it comes with Hugh, who has to live there till the day he dies. Apparently, that's part of the deal.
Yep. Like
Mary Kitzmiller will be here tomorrow.
Woo-hoo, more horse training.
More horse training talk. And then Friday's really bad ads. So get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We will have a prize for you on Friday, I promise.
We need ads.
And Jennifer says we do need ads because she basically purged all the ones from last year so that had accumulated. So she does need ads. Get on Craigslist and find some really crappy ads and send them in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com.
If you type into the search bar and you type in farrier and you spell it wrong, you will come up with bad ads.
I bet. I bet. And that's about it for today. We'll see y'all. Sorry about the
Glenn.
The show being short.
Hit the button.
Ride your horse, wear a helmet. Be safe. Buy your lottery tickets. That might be the most dangerous thing you do today.